WTBH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Independent media is now more important than ever, and we want to know how KBOO Community Radio can best serve you. KBOO's Board of Directors invites you to a community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and online via public video conference. This is your opportunity to share feedback, offer ideas, and help guide the station's direction. The meeting will be followed by a social hour. That's KBOO Community Radio's community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. For more information, visit kboo.fm/community26.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Good morning, this is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder,
board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. I hope you enjoy the show today, and if you want to support us by going to kboo.fm/give and donate a little something, it'll help KBOO continue to do what it does, giving community radio to the community. Enjoy the show.
In the studio today with me is Megan Schrader. Megan, would you tell us about yourself?
I work at the University of Texas at Austin at a program called E4 Texas, which is a post-secondary opportunity for people with intellectual disabilities. And before I did that, I got a degree in musicology, which is the study of music and culture. And when I did that, I ended up doing research on how film music was used to communicate eugenic narratives about disabled people. And I got kind of interested in the right to die issue because although I realized that not all right to die proponents are prejudiced, I was really kind of shocked when I started reading some of the bioethics literature that was published in like the 1990s, where disabled people were compared to animals, various other dehumanizing rhetoric. There are links between the people saying those kinds of things and today's right to die movement. And also seeing the oppression of disabled people generally when I was growing up in the special education system made me feel that autonomy is a complicated thing and that people are very often systemically pushed towards outcomes they don't want. And that drives my opposition to assisted suicide.
So today we are going to dive into the history of eugenics and disabilities. Can you explain what eugenics is for folks who may not know?
Okay, so eugenics is basically the effort to eliminate certain kinds of personal traits. And usually that means eliminating disability. So I'll just give a history. So in book 3 of Plato's Republic, back in ancient Greece, he said that disabled people should be allowed to kill themselves for the good of society. Not all Greeks exposed disabled babies, but it was a common practice, which is echoed in some contemporary right to die people's calls for the infanticide of disabled babies. Then we, but who really got the more modern eugenics movement going was Francis Galton, who was Charles Darwin's cousin. And he, rather than just believing that evolution happened, he wanted to take the principles of natural selection and use it to prevent the birth of certain kinds of people. So he promoted the sterilizing of disabled people, sort of like you sterilize an animal. And then not all eugenicists did favor killing disabled people. Some eugenicists just wanted to lock people up in institutions and prevent them from having babies. But other eugenicists were into euthanizing the disabled so that resources could be spent on other things. So one of the earliest pioneers of that effort was a man named Harry Haselden. You can read more about him in a book called The Black Stork, Motion Pictures and Eugenics in America by Martin Pernick. And he used the media to like promote the idea that disabled babies should be killed. Around that same time in Germany, a man named Alfred Hoche published a treatise called Life Unworthy of Life. And it was about killing the disabled, you know, to save money. And then in America, in 1927, there was Buck versus Bell, which was a decision that a woman had to be sterilized against their will. Unfortunately, a lot of social progressives supported the eugenics movement. It was considered a rational, progressive thing to do. Like, if we could weed disabled people out of the human genome, then we would have all of this social improvement. And then what's really bizarre is that Helen Keller, who is one of the most famous and accomplished people who ever lived, supported eugenics, including panels of doctors deciding whether to kill feeble-minded babies. It was a real exercise in like lateral ableism, someone with a disability being deeply prejudiced against other people with disabilities. And you still see that today with sometimes, you know, disabled people being ableist against other people, including in, you know, a small minority of disabled people supporting assisted suicide. So then from 1939 to 1945, the Nazis took a lot of American ideas and they ended up killing about 300,000 people in a compulsory euthanasia program from 1939 to 1945. And when the Nazis' atrocities came to light, eugenics became less popular in the United States, and a lot of eugenicists moved into fields like family planning. It wasn't a compliment to say you were a eugenicist anymore. And then, you know, then it became a kind of a neo-eugenics that continues to influence cultural narratives about disabled people that still persist today.
Before we go on, this is a sidebar, and I'm just kind of curious, Annie, I've heard things about, is that the Japanese killed people, like when you were born and you had a disability, they killed them instantaneously, clear up to 1997. And I was just like wondering, do you have any information on this? Are you aware of this?
Well, actually, I don't have information on that specific practice, but I can tell you that in 2016, a Japanese man wrote a letter to Japan's parliament saying he wanted Japan to be a country where the disabled can be euthanized. And then he broke into a care home for people with disabilities and stabbed 19 residents to death. And he expressed support for the idea that disabled people were a burden to society. And so you see a clear connection between the sentiment that disabled people should be euthanized and violence against the disabled more generally. Now, today, you can still see echoes of eugenic ideas. So we still see efforts to institutionalize mentally ill people to stop gun violence, pressure on parents who find out their fetus will be disabled to have an abortion, pressured on disabled people to be sterilized, media reports that romanticize or excuse the choice to murder a disabled family member, and of course, current efforts to frame suicide as an appropriate solution to disability and to medicalize people's suicides.
Yeah, I mean, part of my question was the issue of abortion, you know, whether or not that would be seen as part of eugenics, you know, using abortion to determine whether or not your child's going to be disabled and eliminating them before they're even born.
Right. I'm
kind of curious.
Well, I'd say the from what I've gathered from, you know, being a part of the disability rights movement, a lot of people with disabilities, especially disability rights advocates, feel very conflicted about the abortion issue. I'd say most people I've met, well, statistics show that people are divided. Disabled people are divided on the morality of abortion. But I've met a lot of people who are pro-choice and support abortion rights, but also feel frustrated that very often the pro-choice movement has engaged in ableist rhetoric to defend abortion. Like, what if we give birth to a disabled child and we need abortion for that reason? And sometimes, you know, parents who are wrestling with whether to terminate a pregnancy or not aren't really given very accurate information about what disabled people experience. I do find it very disturbing when Right to Die advocates compare their cause to abortion. I realize that the Right to Die movement's cause is premised on consent to euthanasia, but very clearly the euthanasia movement is harming people with disabilities in very significant ways. And I feel like they're treating disabled people like fetuses. I feel like I want to yell, we're not fetuses. You can't like force disabled people to live in a society where our suicides are a medical procedure because you want it. But yeah, I would say most people I know in the disability rights movement tend to swing more towards that pro-choice side of the spectrum, but still feel frustrated that so many people terminate pregnancies based on misinformation or based on conflicts arising from systemic ableism.
You know, I noticed something you said is that this eugenics thing around people with disabilities goes way back. I mean, you were talking about ancient Greeks, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Definitely the Spartan ideal was to take a newborn baby and to take it out and to see if it had any defects, and if it did, they just leave it there to die.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, you know, this is going back, what, 10,000 years or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
How in the world do people, like, I mean, if this has been ingrained into us for 10,000 years, and, I mean, how does society overcome something like that?
I think one of the things that's driving support for the euthanasia movement's broader agenda is lack of training in disability history and lack of visibility of disability justice in our culture. I think that if more people grew up learning about what the ancient Greeks did to the disabled, learning about the American eugenics movement, learning about the Nazi T4 program, learning about how the cultural trope of disabled people's suicides being a good thing has harmed the disabled, I think more people would be more reticent to get on board with the idea that maybe killing the disabled is acceptable. I think, yeah, that's one of the biggest things I would change. I would teach disability history in school so that people are more aware of euthanasia's history as an implement of oppression against disabled people. Now, I'm not trying to say that like every single form of assisted suicide is exactly the same as everything that eugenicists has ever done. I mean, I realize the Oregon model, you have to consent, you have to go through safeguards. People, you know, I can respect people who don't agree with me on that, on whether the Oregon model should exist. But very clearly, that model helps normalize the eugenic message that if you are impaired, perhaps it's acceptable to end your own life. I would also say that if the Right to Die movement doesn't want to be linked to eugenics, the best thing they could do for themselves is not hang out with eugenicists. So in October of this year, there was a meeting of some, it was called the Completed Life Initiative. And the woman who fought to change Vermont's residency requirement so that she could move from Connecticut to use Vermont's law, she accepted an award from the Completed Life Initiative at an event where Peter Singer was speaking. Now, Peter Singer has compared disabled people to chimpanzees, and he has said it's okay to rape certain disabled people. So if you've, and he's also written a paper called Can Eugenics Be Defended, where he defends eugenics. So very clearly, although I'm not accusing everyone of being a eugenicist, I used to have a pastor who supported Oregon's law, and she was a great person. But very clearly, there's a link between hateful attitudes toward the disabled and the Right to Die movement.
So going on to the Right to Die movement, how does Oregon's death with dignity differ, or does it differ, from Canada's maid or medical assistant in dying?
Dying, yeah. So, I mean, okay, so there are significant differences between the two things. Oregon's law can exacerbate things like systemic racism and systemic ableism, because again, they normalize the premise that if you're experiencing some sort of impairment or illness, then perhaps you should consider, you know, ending your life. They sort of exacerbate classism. You can see it like a few years ago, there was a woman named Barbara Wagner on Oregon's Medicaid program, and she wanted chemotherapy, but they told her they would give her lethal drugs instead. And the then director of Compassionate Choices, the main lobby group for these laws, basically wrote an article in which she sort of said, oh, well, that's sad, but it's really not so bad. I mean, she shouldn't have thought that she could live anyway. So it's the Oregon law can exacerbate problems for the disabled and for terminally ill people, but it's more limited in scope. At least Oregon's law is not Canada's law. It's more tightly controlled. I don't think it's generally suggested as a treatment option. Canada's law is a whole other animal, or it's much, much worse. And what's concerning is that many of the advocates for the Oregon model do support a Canada-like law in the United States. So people like Thaddeus Mason Pope, there's another guy named Christopher Riddle who likes to go around proclaiming that he's a disability rights advocate, but says that any harm that assisted suicide might cause for disabled people ought not to be of special concern. So we have people in the United States that would like Canada's law to come here. And Canada's law is a dumpster fire. I have a Canadian friend with severe chronic pain and PTSD. And the Canada law was expanded from people who were dying sometime in the near future to people who were disabled in 2021. And at the time that that law occurred, she was in a really dark place in her life. She was in severe chronic pain. She was not getting any treatment for it. She couldn't access treatment. So she called up it was like a suicide / mental health crisis line for poor people. So she calls them up and says, please help me. I'm in so much pain that all I can think about is dying by MAID, medical assistance in dying. And they said, well, MAID is a perfectly legit and legal option. Maybe it's something you should consider. I mean, the medical system has failed you. And so this woman reached out to me and another Twitter user for help after that happened. And we basically helped talk her down from killing herself for several months. So she eventually made it to a good hospital that treated her pain and mental health problems. It did not suggest MAID, but she was in real trouble. I mean, the MAID system in Canada has removed safe spaces where disabled people will not be urged to die by suicide. So in Canada, doctors are encouraged to bring up MAID as a treatment option whenever they feel like it. People have been offered MAID instead of having a ramp for their house. People have been offered MAID while seeking help for their suicidal thoughts. There's a children's coloring book about MAID that teaches disabled kids that, you know, yeah, some people might choose MAID if their disability won't go away, which is a really horrible message to send to any child using the book. I mean, any disabled child that uses that book will see the line about disabled people killing themselves and will get the message that they should and their life. I mean, this is really fourth class citizenship. I mean, third class citizenship where you're horribly oppressed. And then this is one level below that. You're so oppressed that I can't even be bothered to give you suicide prevention. Go die.
That is absolutely horrible. Wow. Me and my helper are just sitting here trying to digest that. This is just like, oh, what? Excuse me?
Right. I mean, and what's really disturbing is that, you know, people just don't know what they're doing. So, for example, you would have thought it would behoove mainstream suicide prevention organizations to become more aware of the Right to Die movement's broader agenda and to oppose it in order to maintain equality in suicide prevention. But in 2017, the American Association of Suicidology made a statement saying that MAID was not suicide. Now, they primarily meant that for terminal illness But that statement was used totally out of context, including to justify expanding MAID to disabled people in Canada, which was opposed by the Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention. So in 2023, the American Association of Suicidology retracted its statement about MAID not being suicide. But it was kind of late for that. I mean, the genie was let out of the bottle. I mean, their statement that some suicides weren't suicides was used to cause multiple disabled people in Canada to die by suicide. And then you have people like, for example, there's a guy named Thaddeus Mason Pope, who is very, very pro euthanasia model of disability. And I must say, I tend to be really blunt on Twitter. It's kind of an autistic thing. And also, I kind of want to push back in some way against this idea that we should always have a nice, polite discussion about killing disabled people. So anyway, I confronted this one Right to Die movement on Twitter, and I said, you know, you run around all day saying that it's good for disabled people to die by suicide. And do you really not think that your advocacy is contributing to suicide contagion among people with disabilities? And he said, good for people with disabilities if that is what they want. And so I tweeted, so the suicides of people with disabilities are good? And he said, yes, if that is what they want. And I mean, again, that's very hateful. You're putting disabled people in a position to have suicide suggested to them whenever. All marginalized groups face severe oppression, but in that kind of world, disabled people are being, of all creeds, colors, nationalities, sexual orientations, are being singled out as members of the only marginalized group who have suicide suggested to them on a regular basis. It's terrible.
How is it that people are getting away with this? And where is the legal system to sue on behalf of people with disabilities to, you know, I mean, this kind of rhetoric can lead to some, it can lead back to, you know, us winding up back in the Nazi times with people with disabilities being rounded up, put into camps and executed.
I think you can make subtle comparisons between, I think we need to think about the fact that disabled people are condemned to kind of what Paul Longmore, who is a disability studies scholar, would call a social death, not getting the accommodations we need, not being able to access an education, not being able to have jobs. And very often that comes from extreme prejudice against the disabled, extreme hate toward the disabled. And so this is, from my perspective, Canada's program is a kind of hate crime. It's hateful to suggest that if you need help going to the restroom, you should consider ending your own life. I don't think Oregon's law is quite, that doesn't reach that quite level. It exacerbates systemic inequalities and it is bad. But Canada has just jumped off a cliff. And you don't have to be rounding people up in camps for this to be a form of systemic violence. Again, I keep thinking about that man in Japan who stabbed 19 disabled people to death because he felt they were a burden. The similarities between that and Canada's program is that the Canadian government and the Canadian media have released documents saying that it is good that the MAID program will save their healthcare system money. Also, the disabled population in Canada is much like our population in the United States. People are living in abject poverty. And just recently, the Canadian government said it was going to release a new disability benefit to get disabled people out of poverty, but it was only $6 a day. They gave them $6 a day to like get out of poverty, which does nothing. So yeah, people are not being rounded up and put in camps, but that's like the disabled, but the Canadian government does not deserve to be congratulated for that. The disabled community deserves to live with true dignity. They shouldn't have to live in a society where they have nothing to eat and also doctors regularly offer to help them kill themselves.
What do you recommend we do about something like this?
I personally, what I recommend. I know I can empathize with people who support Oregon's model of assisted suicide. I don't think that everyone who disagrees with me on that is an ableist person or necessarily wants to harm the disabled. But I think people need to understand that once we pass those laws, it normalizes the rhetoric of the eugenicists who are connected to the Right to Die movement. It makes it easier for people who want to expand the laws to achieve their broader agenda. And that agenda is so horrible that it justifies preventing the legalization of it for anyone. So that's why, you know, groups like Not Dead Yet exist. That's why, you know, there are 17 disability rights organizations in the United States that have come out against it. That's why in Canada, 130 organizations, including every disability rights organization in the country, released a statement saying that their euthanasia program was bad. This issue is why the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Rights of People with Disabilities released a statement in 2021 opposing assisted suicide. So I would suggest fighting all forms of assisted suicide. Like, I wouldn't suggest mentioning the Nazis unless you have a longer time to talk about the history of euthanasia. People won't usually understand how that could possibly be connected. But definitely, I think we should advocate against these laws and point out how they exacerbate systemic inequalities, how they exacerbate ableism, how they exacerbate the sentiment that disabled people should consider ending their lives. Which again, I'll just a little bit of an aside. There's been research published indicating that disabled people have a much higher suicide rate and that people of all abilities tend to view suicide as acceptable if you are disabled, and there are very few suicide prevention programs for disabled people. So we need to send the message that disabled people dying by suicide is not acceptable, and they deserve better. And we also need to set up regular suicide prevention orgs for disabled people. Lastly, I want to warn disabled listeners. I've seen a lot of efforts by Right to Die organizations to sort of reach out to the disabled or like try to find common ground with the disabled. And I would encourage all the listeners to reject those overtures. The Right to Die movement hangs out with eugenicists who hate disabled people very much. Even though I realize that not everyone who supports it is bad, and I'm not encouraging disabled people to like, you know, reject friends or family members who disagree about the euthanasia thing. Don't respond to the overtures of groups like Compassion Choices or the Death with Dignity National Center or any other person who wants to legalize assisted suicide and take us down that path. Clearly and emphatically say no. No, we will not find common ground. We will not make killing disabled people a matter that polite people can be expected to agree to disagree about. So have compassion for the proponents, but don't think that they're our friends. I think some people care who favor the Oregon model do care about people with disabilities, but others do not. They simply want to neutralize an impediment to their agenda. And I would encourage people to be mindful of that. And again, I just worry about some disabled people becoming more comfortable with assisted suicide as time goes on. I think people from the younger generations may not understand all of the historical ways that euthanasia has been used to harm the disabled. They may not be aware that some of the people that the Right to Die movement hangs out with are eugenicists, and it's becoming more common as more laws were passed. I would say disability rights advocates should have compassion for people who want the Oregon law, but they should definitely make opposing it an important part of their disability justice work.
I want to thank you for coming on my show and giving us this valuable information.
Keep resisting, you know.
Trust me, I've been resisting for, 11 years now, and they still don't listen to me. And I even wind up going up to our state capitol and talking to representatives and senators. Yeah, I'm not getting a huge response from them.
Yeah, I mean, most people in the disabled people feel that politicians don't care about the disabled community. And I think that's true. I totally hear you. I do a lot of advocacy too, where it's like, why aren't you listening about like the 20 other things like education or about, you know, job, or why aren't you eliminating subminimum wages? There's just a pattern of disabled people being ignored and marginalized in society, and assisted suicide fits into that pattern.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting subject, and it is one that I do believe we'd like to do like a second part on or something like that.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea.
That's the end of disability justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kboo.org.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice.